Hello, everyone, and welcome to Padawan Unlimited. It is Wednesday night, April 16th at 9:12 p.m. Eastern Time. We are doing this recording, and maybe I'll start doing that timestamp in the future. But I'm excited to share that in that, like, this is like the fresh snooze we can have. I mean, like, there's literally, unless we're doing it like 6 o'clock in the morning, 2 hours before we drop, like, this is the freshest snooze that we can have. And today I'm only joined by Rob. How you doing, man?
Hello there. Yeah. our commensurate or other co-host is having a good time down in Florida without us. So, you know, he's being a dad and a you know, getting some relaxing time in. So kudos to you, Corey. We'll see you in a week.
Yeah. I wanted to say that he was like you know, investigating the Kissimmee PQ area, but he's just being a good dad. We miss him, but you know, the show continues. We've gone 40 plus weeks straight of Padawan Unlimited podcasting, no breaks, no holidays, nothing. Like, there's always been at least a 10 minute episode, even if it's just me. Unbroken streak. We're gonna make it to 50, and then maybe we'll do a celebration, and then we're gonna make it to 100. And then we'll probably, the game will be over by then. No, I was kidding.
Well, to quote the great Freddie Mercury, the show must go on.
Yes, the show must go on. And with that, we are a couple of logistical announcements, actually, before we get into the meat and potatoes of the discussion today, which we have a very interesting topic. I don't know if anyone really talks about, is ever really talks about this. So I'm excited to, pensive about what we're going to talk about. But before that, one big piece of news for anyone who's been on the PadawanUnlimited.com website and made purchases of cards and stuff. I'm actually shutting down the website. It's not an easy, and that actually happened today. It's not necessarily an easy decision, but it just, because I don't have a distributor or anything like that, it just didn't make any fiscal sense to continue that endeavor, especially when, like, there's other mediums for, selling cards, for example. So I have ceased those operations. If you have an order, like, those orders are already out, so, like, there should be nothing on the block right now, and you're still going to get it. And you could still email me at gil@padawanlimited.com, Gil with one L. If you are seeking to find some legendaries, rares, hyperspaces, hyperspace foils, whatever, you know, feel free. And I'm also probably going to be a little bit more active on some of the Discords with some of the cards that I have in terms of selling. But until there's a way I can make it a little bit more fiscally positive in that sense, because, you know, like, just purchasing like the website costs money. I'm not going to start that. I'm not going to keep that store up anymore. It was fun. Don't get me wrong. There was a lot of people like bought stuff, but I appreciate anyone who's given me the support at that point. But that's just an announcement. So if you search for that website anymore, it's no longer there. Maybe like one day we'll start like a Patreon or something, and like that'll help like fund those endeavors. But also, as soon as I get a distributor, that'll make it more worthwhile, because then I could sell like meaningful product, not just like singles for like one TCG. Okay. So the other main topics for today, for obviously the first topic of now our podcast, is collections. And, you know, what is the state of the collection? And shout out to Glue, one of our listeners, one of our locals, actually, too.
One of our locals, and, yeah.
Yeah, pretty good, really good player, really funny guy. I always enjoy playing against him at the table. And sometimes he's, like, throwing cards. And I was like, he's like, I'm sorry, Gil, and, like, Devastator. And, like, he just wins the game. It's just funny. But shout out to him. We executed some trades, I'll say, this past Tuesday or yesterday, to help me complete what I want to call the master set. For set one, at least. So getting some of those hyperspace foils and stuff. And he also gave me some, I also got some prestige cards as well. Now, the thing I want to talk about for the collection is what constitutes a master set? And so I'm going to ask that just a generic question, Rob, and then I'm going to start poking holes. But what constitutes a master set to you?
To me, I would say, at least in this game, it's probably the one of each. So one regular, one foil, one hyperspace foil of each card. I don't think I would include showcases in there. Maybe. I don't know. That's where I get a little bit questionable.
Yeah.
But like, at the very least, it's got to be one of each of the, like, the numbered cards. Because the showcases are still the same number as, like, I'm not mistaken there, the same number as the leader, correct?
That's a good question. I don't think so. At least that for set four. Set four goes like to 1,000. You know what? Let me grab a card. I'm going to check for set one.
Hang on, let me break out all of my really cool showcases, says Gil.
Oh my god. No, my gosh. So let me check out Director Krennic doing this live in my binder. He is number 253. So Director Krennic, the showcase, is number 253. So that's set one only goes up 252, so, right? So, yeah. This is it. It actually continues the numbering.
So it is like a new. Okay, so they are different numbers. So then I might consider that then, because to me I would say is it's the numbered cards, right?
Yeah.
So like, you know, we're for you this... know Millennium Falcon, because I'm shuffling right now and I got my Falcon here and it's one, you know, 193 of 252.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah.
So okay. So I agree with that. I would say that that's the master set. But I think there's different tiers. And so here's what I mean. Like, I found out about this for Pokemon, that there's like the master set, but there's like also like a grand master set. And the grand master set is like all the alt art, all the judge cards, like of anything mm-hmm. that is related to the first set. So it's not even like all the judge cards of like the wave, but like K2SO of the judge prime mm-hmm. of the judge cards would count for a master set of set one. Now, is that too much, do you think? Like, where's that line? Because, like, for example, yeah, well, hold on, I'll ask that. Like, is that too much, do you think?
I mean, to me it is, but I'm also not the collector of the group, frankly. You know, because to me it's like those are like ultimate chase cards. It's kind of like, you know, I was watching a KTOD video a couple of weeks ago, and it was like, you know, he was talking about Bobby Sapphire was talking about how he was like chasing down all of the play mats, right? And it's just like, to me that's like a step too far.
Okay. So, okay, so playmats is a different thing because it's not the cards, right? But it's like it's a collector thing, obviously, but it's not like
right.
The cards.
So I'm saying like to make the equivalent, you know, there, the judge cards. I think like if you're going for that, if that's what floats your boat, cool. But if you're really just going, I would call a master set, like all the numbered cards in, you know, the different, iterations of them, hyperspaces and foils and things like that. And then I guess the showcase, I mean, as I was saying earlier, even for me, like, I think the showcases are questionable, but since they're separately numbered, I guess I would consider
But what about the numbered cards that are part of the set? So for example, the store showdown cards, like the Mace Windus, having one of each of like top eight, top four,
finalists, oh god, all the champion, way up to champion,
you know, like, and then also the judge card, they have the takedowns, and then there's also the participation promos of like the weekly, the organized play weekly promos. Does that count for the master set?
The weekly plays are a separate set. Yeah,
they're separate set, number. But they're all
the way, like.
Yeah, but they're only part per set one. Like, does that count for the master set, or is that something else? Like that grand master set, you know?
Yeah, I feel like if I'm saying like set one is 1 to 252 plus the showcases. Up to whatever that works out to be, I don't know, 4 times, so 1632 plus another 32.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's like the set one master set. Like if they're separately numbering, which they are, because I'm looking at some set one weekly play cards.
Yeah.
It's a separate set.
Mm-hmm.
Under that. Now, if you're going, you know, like I know you, for example, you're trying to collect master sets of seasons 1, 2, and 3 and then 4 ?
We'll see.
Exactly. But you know, to me, that I would consider that like a separate set. So if it's like a subset, right? Like you're getting like the weekly play you know, if you're trying to get the master set of the weekly plays, then okay, yeah, you know, then you have to get the that's even kind of harder because now you have to get like the weekly plays plus you have to pull the foil versions of the ones that they did the foils for, and yeah. Like, those are super rare in there, so that's
yeah. It might even be
unless you're and I pull IG foil IG11s all the time.
Yeah, it might be worth it actually when you think about the weekly play packs to just like buy a box of that. From like a buy the box straight and just don't go to the events just because you have the higher like time wise and money wise it's probably gonna be cheaper to like do that overall. Okay, so I guess what I'm saying then is like for at least set one, I'm gonna go for like a Jedi Council set, right? I don't know what the right term is because Grandmaster I feel like is cool, like it's like stealing from another like IP. I'm gonna try to go for like a Jedi Council set.
Well, there's Jedi Grandmasters.
Jedi Grandmaster set because I'm gonna actually try to get literally every card that is related to a card in set one. So okay. Like the Avenger Judge cards, the one through the champion and to top 16 for Dr. Evazan, I think. No, that doesn't count.
Evazan is set two.
No, he's set two.
It's Mace Windu.
Mace Windu, which I'm still chasing a championship, but I have up the finalist.
Yeah, I was gonna say like you and I both have a finalist, and then
yeah,
neither of us could seal the deal.
Yeah, never. It's like I'm always getting right at the edge, just edging the entire time. That's inappropriate. Phrasing. Yeah, so I think I'm gonna go for that at least for set one, but then like get a master set for two and three. For, like, this is really just the first year of SWU, right? That's where I really want to focus on. And then if four and on happen, then I'll do it, but like I'm not gonna go for it. That's just too much money, you know what I mean? And like,
yeah, I hear you,
you know. I even this set, like, yeah, I bought Carbonites, I feel good but also bad about doing that. I don't know if I'm going to do that again in the future. We'll see. But yeah,
I probably will, but I don't know if to your point, I don't know if it's to the extent that I'm going that I went with this one.
We'll yeah, see. Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like the hyperspace art. Like that's my thing with it. Like I'm not doing it for like the set, but I do like having the hyperspace cards in the deck when I play them. So I'm looking for like the playable cards in hyperspace, and that's kind of the best way to get them.
They look so much better. Like hyperspace,
they do.
And like a deck just looks so good. I'm like, my decks are so janky that like I'll have like a weekly play one, a hyperspace one, and then like a regular card because I just don't have, like, I'm not touching the ones that are actually in my binder. Those are like the collection, right? I'm not gonna actually just play with them,
right?
But so like I don't have multiples of like hyperspaces, like all the cards I want to play. Feels bad.
So like right now I'm messing around with like the Falcons, and like these are the new Falcons, these are the three. So I have the hyperspace, it's the foil version,
yeah,
the hyperspace foil weekly play, and then just a regular hyperspace. Oh, so it's like, you know, completely
throw in a I actually am playing with a spare prestige card in one of my decks for red five.
Oh, nice.
Flexing that, I guess.
So So that I do actually really love doing, like throwing the prestige cards in there. So like I've got the blue leaders, like this one,
nice.
Just hanging out in this deck right now. And no, just because it just looks so good. Like I don't know, you know.
No, you can't. But yeah,
that's
sure.
Just me.
Someone mentioned to me that if you want to flex your serialized card in a deck and you're playing it, like when you play it, just be like, I'm swapping this out for this card, and then put it on the deck. Put it on the
put the bricked one in there.
Put the bricked one on the table. Like, I'm just playing this one out there. That'd be so crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I feel kind of bad when I'm talking about this with Corey, but we'll talk about. I think we'll just bring it up next week and see what he says, because I'm sure he has his own opinion. He has his own opinion on it as well.
I'm sure he does too. But to that, we can just make Corey a little bit jealous. Actually, I'm probably gonna make you a little bit jealous because I told your wife this, but you don't know this yet. So I gave a lecture recently, and as a little present to myself, I got myself something. I got a Palpatine showcase.
Oh, are you serious? Dude, that's a
good look. I just outright bought it. I was just like, it's such a good looking showcase. Because, and like what I was explaining to my significant other about it, I was just like, you know, I know it's going to go out of rotation in a couple sets, but I don't even feel bad about it because it's like, it's a good looking card.
No, it's
like, I would just display that.
It's to me one of the top three best looking showcases out there. Like, straight up. It's just, it's, I don't even have that yet. I have almost.
That's why I said I'll make you jealous. Cause it's one of the ones you're missing.
It's one of the ones I'm missing. I just, one day I'll get it. Just every slowly.
He's coming down in price.
Yeah. I'm kind of, but you know what's going to happen? Set 5 is going to come out. He's going to go, he's going to spike again. Cause he's a force unit, right?
I know that's that. I'm trying to preempt the market a little bit.
Oh my God. Yeah. You know, that's a good idea. Maybe I'll like trade in some reward points for cash on my credit card and then like buy it.
There you go.
That's what I'm doing. Like that's how I've been funding. Part of how I've been funding my Swoo like habit is that like, instead of actually hitting my bank account, it's always like the rewards and I pay with like rewards points. Cause like, whatever, you know,
I mean, why not? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's free fake money.
Free fake money, yeah. I mean, you spend money to get money, I guess. Okay, so moving on. That was a fun conversation. We'll move on to the next topic, which is meta stuff. Rob, what do you have for us?
Oh boy, we are in the Wild West right now.
You're not wrong.
Gil, you were there. You were there last night. Django's gone, and like the meta is wide open. Like we saw some wild stuff last night. I'm not gonna blow up Mike's tech, but I am the deck that I am like messing around with in the background is based off of Mike Elemental, for those of you, he's one of our locals. Yeah. And a very good competitor.
Shout out,
so I'm not gonna blow up his tech.
Shout out to Team McClunky. I'm wearing my team shirt. He is the first, he's the one of the first people to get like that a top 8 with a Luke at a PQ like a set ago.
Yep.
2 sets ago. So he's like legit. He's top 8 a couple times actually at this point with pseudo off meta decks. He's a real cool guy as well. Yeah. Like I love that dude. He's really fun to play with. And his crew is like, they're all like talented players. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I'm not going to blow up his tech, but he had a really, really interesting deck that he was playing that is going to be a problem. It's just going to be a problem.
Oh, yeah.
We're seeing things like that weren't able to be played come back, you know. So like we were seeing a little bit of Gar because he was a good counter to Django, but now I think Gar by himself is actually still pretty strong. The one that I'm probably going to be talking about is the one that I played last night, and you got to see it, you know, head to head against me.
It's good.
Is Palp Yellow.
Yeah.
It's good. It's very good. You know,
I like how
had a feeling Palp. Oh yeah, like the Palp showcase. Now I'm like,
I like how you foreshadowed it. Yeah, it's good stuff. That's good TV.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. See, it's almost like I planned it. in all honesty, I think Palpatine in general is still is very strong. I mean, he's always been strong, but he's always had the Sabine problem a little bit in previous metas, and now between Colossus. For the blue version of him, and honestly, Palp Yellow with just, you know, very few new cards, like new cards from JTL, is still very strong into Sabine. I don't think it's a favored match, but you've got a game, and that's, you know, if that was Palp's biggest weakness, combined with the fact that I think Sabine's on a little bit of a downturn. Makes me think that he's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the upcoming meta. If for those of you who haven't seen the Palp Yellow deck, I just straight up net decked the top 4 PQ winner from where was it? It was Liverpool, I think. You know, just to get a feel for it, and for those of you who kind of feel bad about
PQ
like,
or the sector qualifiers,
or there is, sorry, the sector.
Okay,
It was a top 4. It was a top 4 sector.
Wow.
So I just straight up net decked it, and this is just a you know kind of like a don't feel bad about net decking talk here. It's a great way to learn. It's a great way to learn a deck. See what's worked, because like, look, I love playing. I am god awful at building decks, not gonna lie.
Yeah,
like I'm like, man, I build a deck and I'm like, man, I think this is gonna be great, and it's just a pile of hot garbage every single time. But I understand the lines. So like once I've played a deck, and so like I'll go to SwooDB, and like that's one of the things that I think you just have to be you know, kind of cognizant of, be aware of where you're getting it from. Like, if it's some random person's deck, it may not be good, but you know, if you've seen it qualify in a couple different things, take a look at it, build it, play it. And that's pretty much what I did last night. And it was a good time. It's very much a tempo deck, which is what I'm coming to realize is what I actually really enjoyed about Django. Is that he was a tempo deck, right? Like he was aggro, but he was about using tempo to basically create a favorable situation
for anyone who's new out there, like me, relatively. So can we talk about real briefly? Can we talk a little bit about what tempo means, like a little bit deeper?
Sure.
Like tempo is, I'm assuming it's like you're either ramping up yourself or slowing down your opponent or both in order to achieve your goal of winning. I don't know if that's the right way to phrase
yeah.
it, but like, what is tempo?
So I would usually I categorize it as being slowing down your opponent. So a great example of a tempo card is Waylay. Waylay is the kind of perfect example of a tempo card. It doesn't get you anything other than the fact that it slows down your opponent, right? So it's three costs, bounce a unit back to your opponent's hand. So you're not getting anything out of it, but what you're doing is you're delaying, right? You're trying to effectively create an opening in which you can take advantage of. So by using Waylay, you're creating a board state where your opponent used resources that are now, he'll have to either spend again mm-hmm. in order to get the benefit of it, or, you know, they'll have to, you know, they're going to lose out on it. Like another thing is like they lose out on an attack, right? So if you have initiative and your opponent plays a unit on turn one and then you waylay it on turn two, you're not getting anything, but you're also preventing an opponent's attack and you're making them effectively waste resources. So that's kind of the archetype of a tempo. And it's one of the things that I enjoyed about Django. Django, you were tempoing by exhausting units. You were doing it by damaging them using his ability, but you were exhausting units, which meant that you weren't removing the unit from the board, but you were preventing damage to your base, which eventually you could create a situation where you would overwhelm them. And that was kind of the ultimate goal of Django, was like walk that razor's edge so that you can, you know, mm-hmm. get there before your opponent kind of, you know, outpaces you.
Okay, fair. Yeah, that's great. I think that if anyone's watching the YouTube or the can submit a comment, like, do you agree with that? I mean, I think that makes sense. That makes sense to me. I would agree with that's what a tempo deck is, but you never know. Like, people always have different variations of what they think mm-hmm. something is or the definition. I don't, and I'm not going to Google that live now. But I feel like that's right, and I never thought of any palp deck as tempo. I've always thought of them as some type of soft or hard control-y type thing, but it makes sense, especially with the yellow cunning type.
Yeah,
of,
yellow makes him
thing. Yeah, brutal.
It's really yellow is where a lot of the tempo plays are in the game, frankly. Between there are a staggering number of options in Villainous, but Heroic also has quite a few, and that makes it pretty good. Actually, we can talk about the one that I wasn't sure about, and I played it on you and you were like, this card is awful, and that is In Debt to the Crimson Dawn.
Okay, so really what Rob was practicing was against was a Sabine player. So like I was playing Sabine at Locals the other night. And because I feel like everyone's testing to do Richmond next week, especially in our area, or maybe if not Richmond, mm-hmm. they're prepping to see what the new meta is going to look like. And there always needs to be a standby. Like, I don't actually, like, usually when I do Locals, it's always a type of off meta deck. Like, our last set was like Rex, Obi-Wan. Like, I was playing all these other off, like, kind of wonky decks. But knowing that the meta is shifting,
you mean you aren't doing Rex Unity of Purpose?
No. No. Although that deck defeats Sabine so easily, it's not even funny. Like Sabine can't win against that deck. But then it loses to like any Han deck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we're running lines essentially. We played like five games, and you took two of them. You were gonna take. Yep. We didn't get to finish one of them, but you would have taken that.
Yeah,
one,
but
like,
I was probably gonna take that one.
I think you were gonna take it because you had slowed me down just enough. I wasn't playing Sabine ECL. I was playing Sabine Yellow, actually. And you took two. So out of five games, like, that's not bad ratios, considering...
Particularly, you know, for Palpin, considering how bad, like, that matchup traditionally has been.
Yeah, and one of the, and at least for that one game, like, when you started playing In Depth of the Crimson Dawn, that really slowed me down as a Sabine player. And yeah, as any aggro, actually, would probably slow down.
Like, yeah, any aggro player, that is a brutal card. You know, I was initially very down on it because it does, we have things like Perilous Position, which just you play it and it exhausts and it also depowers a unit. It sometimes kills them because they only have two health. But the thing about In Depth of the Crimson Dawn is particularly or not particularly specifically against aggro decks. Aggro decks are pretty much predicated on the idea that you're going to win by turn six. Like, if you go longer than turn six, you've probably lost the game because your opponent's probably stabilized. They're able to deal with the things that you have on the table.
Yeah.
So the thing about In Debt to the Crimson Dawn is, and for those of you who don't know the card, it's a two cost villainous yellow that when you play, it's an upgrade that you play onto a unit. When you play it onto a unit, nothing happens initially. There's no negatives, there's no anything, but the next time they go to ready that unit, they have to pay two resources in order it immediately exhausts when they ready it, and then they have to pay two resources to unexhaust it.
Yeah.
Which it means that if you play that on your like you don't play a turn one play and you just play that on your opponent's turn one play as your turn one play, it's effectively that they didn't get a turn one play because they have to then decide whether or not they're going to spend the resources to effectively untap that unit or play a unit the next turn. So they're either getting the damage from the thing that they pay for, or they're losing tempo. Again, speaking of tempo, they're losing tempo by not being able to play a unit on turn two.
It's one of those cards that, like, especially if you're a go tall kind of deck, it's devastating. I think devastating against. And, like, you have to have, like, you're wasting a removal on your own card. You know what I mean? Like if you sideboard confiscates, or let's say disabling Fang Fighters, Bamboozle, whatever, Waylay, like, you have to use it on your own card, which is very painful. And we talk about tempo. That really slows someone down, especially if, like, they're trying to go aggro, because they can only play a one drop. If they want to play on turn two, if they want to play that unit again, you know, it's pretty tough. Or if they want to attack with that unit.
Yeah, I do think it starts to lose value the later the game goes, but early on in the game, it is devastating. It slows down an aggro player to the point that there's not a lot they can do. So, Gil kind of got to see it firsthand. In Debt to the Crimson Dawn, actually, that game I didn't end up getting all of my Bazines. but Bazine is another one. Like, if you have initiative, particularly as a turn one play, you play it. Yeah, your opponent gets to draw a card, but if they only have one turn one, you Bazine and you're like, yeah, that thing is gone. And then they draw and they don't draw another turn one play. Like, sometimes they just draw another turn one play and you're like, oh, well, okay.
Yeah.
You know, but, maybe a good 50% of the time they don't. And then you're like, cool, I can't do anything this turn.
So pretty much, like, anyone who's in the meta or is trying to play competitively, and if you haven't already done this yet or haven't realized, pro tip, like, if you're playing against a cunning player, which is going to be like half the field at this point, always, if you have a hand with two turn one plays, keep it.
Always keep them.
Like, just keep it. Like, even if it seems like you're not going to have plays for rounds 2-3, like, what's worse? You know what I mean? Like, you have to think about it in that sense. I would much rather have the two plays. And I still make that mistake sometimes because I get a little too eager with specific combos, like, later on. But then I realize I'm sacrificing. You need to do 5-6 damage turn two as aggro. You know? You want to make sure
three,
you establish...
Three is minimum.
Yeah, or you want to establish some type of... Or just in general, you want to establish some type of board presence. And if you don't do that, and a person who's, you know, on your opposite side is built for the long game, it's going to be very painful to recover from. So just, you know, maybe not pro tip, but, like, basic competitive tip, I'll say.
Casual try-hard tip.
Casual try-hard tip, yeah. So No, that you know that's a, you know that's some good insight. I don't think many people play that card, and it was definitely something that I had to learn how to play around. It just so happened as a Sabine yellow player, I play a lot of one drops, so it wasn't as bad for me. But like,
yep,
like any other aggro deck,
it was still pretty bad.
Frankly. It was annoying for sure. Like because I pretty much, yeah, like you said, didn't have a turn one play and I had to think about it. And I also didn't draw like a disabling Fang Fighter to remove it.
No, you resourced it.
Yeah, resource it because I didn't realize that you had have that. So it's just that's tough. But or like even like you put that on like a you know a Von Reg deck, like against a Von Reg deck, and what are they gonna do?
God,
like,
he hates it.
Yeah, how painful would that be? You can't ready your own unit. That's to play yeah. it. Yeah, it's tough. So I mean
you can co-Iger in it, but you know, but then you're not getting the two swings. So
yeah, exactly, and that really slows you down. If that's just devastating. Okay, so what else about the meta do you think is going to shift as we go into the next week, which is the start of the competitive season, the true start of competitive season?
True. Yeah. I think the question is going to be like, what beats Han and what beats Quinlan right now? Those are the two strongest decks in,
yeah.
I think in the meta right now. And so it's going to be finding answers to those. If your deck doesn't have a game into those, then it's probably not going to be viable. The other thing that I've kind of come around to, and I've been trying to make it work, and I'm just kind of sad about it, is I think pilots are going away for a while, or pilot leaders at least are going away for a while. They're too vulnerable, particularly to yellow, just in general right now, between Waylay, between Bamboozle, between you know anything that you know exhausts a unit. It's just it's sad times. Like I so want to make Von Reg work, and not just because of the showcase, but because I think he's an interesting version of like a red villain aggro deck. But he just like you have like you're so locked into what your game plays. Your turn one has to be a certain thing. Your turn two has to be a certain thing, so that you can flip him on turn three. And like, there's certain cards that you want to have in your hand for turn three. So you know, unfortunately, unless your pilot like Boba four will still be okay. Boba set four will still be okay because he has an immediate impact. But unless your pilot leader has you know some sort of immediate impact, they're going away.
Okay. Well, wise words. We'll see what it looks like. We'll talk about this a little bit more next week in preparation for some sector qualifiers that are coming up. And then we'll see how it goes on for the rest of the PQ season starting in May. Okay. So last topic I want to talk about today, and maybe we'll talk about this for like 5-10 minutes, was finding balance with gameplay. And here's what I mean. Not actually like gameplay as in like how do you balance the meta? Talking about how do you balance this hobby or playing SWU with like your real life or like just like other pieces of your life, other areas of your life. And I'm going to be a little transparent here. So like, right. So everyone kind of already knows that like I'm part of a competitive team now. I started a couple months ago. I do content creation, do the podcast with you. I'd go to a bunch of different events like Milan a couple of weeks ago, right? Do multiple PQs every season. I collect things. I invest a lot of time, money, and effort into Star Wars Unlimited. And I love this game. So far, I really love the community as well. And I want to see it grow, and I want to be part of it as, you know, this makes it to 20 years or something like that. But, you know, that comes at a cost, right? It comes at a cost to personal relationships. Financial like impact, a variety of other things that become deprioritized because I play this game, and you know, and it's lots of times to their detriment, and that's just me being honest, open, and frank about it. And I think this is a topic that we don't really talk about in this community. Or maybe I don't know if it's like the same thing for other TCGs, but I definitely have not seen a video about something like this for Star Wars Unlimited. Mm-hmm. Right. And I want to talk about it because I, you know, when we think about the longevity of a game, like it's based on players and players that either burn out or, you know, become addicted to it or do anything like that. And they stop playing. That's not, if they keep playing like that, it's not necessarily a good thing. But they're like, oh, this is really bad. And they stop and then the game just doesn't continue because you lose all your players. So I want to talk about, how do you find balance with doing something like this that is brings you enjoyment, you know, brings you close friendships, I'll say, stuff like that, but also balancing it with like family, friends, taking care of your pets. You know what I mean? Like things like that. I think that's important. And hopefully you do too. So I'm going to pitch it to you. Like before I share anything, like Rob, what do you think about that? Mm-hmm. Do you think it's worth talking about that?
No, I think it is. You know, I am someone who experiences burnout on these things. You know, outside of SWU, I'm also a community organizer for a board game group.
Yeah,
I do run some of our local events, like there. And you know, for me, it does. It eats up a lot of time. And you're trying to balance. You know, I definitely feel the pull of like, oh, well, I have this commitment to this community, right? As a whole, and I feel that obligation. But then I've also got, you know, my obligations at work, my obligations to my relationships, you know, like all of those things. And it can sometimes be very stressful, even though you enjoy doing that thing. What I've found and what has worked at least for me was, you know, when it came to my board game group, for example, Corey is one of my co-organizers, but I diversified and expanded the number of people that I ran that group with. It means that I don't have as much individual control, which I'm actually pretty much okay with. I didn't really ever want to have all the control. I just kind of ended up with it. Yeah. But, you know, but to me, you know, it's the many hands make light work, right? So you start to outsource some of those other things to other people, not because you want to burden them or any of that, but it's because you feel an obligation to the community. You want to make sure that it continues to grow in that same way. You know, so that was like, that's like just an example from like my own personal experience with this. You know, I mean, I think in general, it's tough because, you know, if you're playing competitively, if you're playing, you know, something and you know, like, again, we talk about it in that the Northeast is very competitive. So like, even if you just want to go to your locals and you're like, I just want to like play some games and not get stomped every single time, you know, you have to, which happened, like, you know, Gil and I talk about this, but it's like, you know, like, we're like, I'm okay at the game. I just like playing it. I'm never going to be great at it. And that's fine because I realize the level of commitment that I would have to put into it is more than I can handle. So, you know, it's like making those, you know, judgment calls, for lack of a better way to describe it, about like, what do I value here? What do I get out of this? And how do I make it so that I still enjoy this, but I'm also not like, it doesn't feel like a job.
Yeah. No, I agree. So for me, it's like, I've started. So this is my first, since this is like my first real TCG and like, I'm like all in on everything. I had to take a breath and think about like, what am I doing here? And why am I doing it? And how can I create strategies to like help me, like, so I can still play the game, enjoy it, do well in it, but like also balance my like life. Right. I just so happen to have an exceedingly supportive wife that is, you know, very, very open with me about stuff like this and like very has been very accommodating for a lot of the things that I've done for Star Wars Unlimited. And so but some of the strategies that I think about, like, for example, is, you know, you have to give and take. You have to do some give and take. So like during the PQ season.
It's communication.
During the PQ season, I didn't go to locals. I didn't go to local events throughout the week. I mean, when I first started this game, I was playing three times a week at three different locals, three different stores, you know, like for like months. And then you know, you can't do that. I can't feasibly think about like, how can I do that and PQs and still maintain like a job, a family, you know, like all of these things. Like you have to find that type of balance. And if you can't find that balance, or if you you're unwilling to, and that was a point where I was like that. Like there was a point, probably like a set ago, where I was like, I was at that point. it's probably not, it's not healthy. You know, it's like an addiction. It's like an addiction, essentially, right? And once you realize that, like, oh, wow, there's some stuff you have to, like, kind of resolve. Like, why are you prioritizing this over, I don't know, a loved one, right? If you have loved one, I mean, maybe not everyone. Some people, like, really love to just hang out by themselves. That's fine. But I'm talking about, like, for me in this specific scenario, like, oh, wow, okay. Or I'm spending so much money on this one thing and I'm not spending money on stuff that I should probably spend money on, right? These are like choices you have to make. And so how do you develop mm-hmm. these strategies? And part of it is like, you sometimes you have to reflect, just like a Jedi, like find that inner peace and realize, why am I doing this? How am I doing this? And how can I improve it so there's a balance between everything in life, right? That was kind of, sorry, go ahead.
No, you got to bring balance to the force, man.
Yeah. So that's some of the stuff that I've done is like taking a step back in terms of collecting. Like, I'm not trying to collect the master set of all the sets, making that decision, right? I still don't go to all weekly plays. I don't go to weekly local events 3 times a week anymore. Maybe it's once every 2 weeks. You know, I still do stuff like Milan, but you know, my wife is coming with me. You know, so it's not like I'm doing it alone. although I'm in a tournament all day, so I can't necessarily say that.
Yeah, just, I was just saying, just she's a little bit of a swoo widow during the day.
Swoo widow. That's painful to think about. That's painful to think about. You know, and I don't like create. I've decided not to create content multiple days every week because that's also time consuming, right? Like, I might at most, I usually only do 2 videos, like the podcast being one of them, every week. Which, does that suck in terms of like not being able to like get to that 500 subs so I can give away that that convention show convention pack? But like at the end of the day, like you gotta find time to do other things so that you can play longer.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, it's a little bit of the like the social media influencer problem to some extent, or not problem, but like conundrum, right? You know, it's like it's like, what do you do? You just sit on screen all day and play video games. That's not a job, right? You know, but it is like there's a lot of stuff that goes into it behind the scenes, and like again, you talk about time commitments and monetary and just all these different types of commitments that you take on by doing this stuff. And it's not to say that we don't enjoy doing it. We obviously do.
Yeah.
It's about understanding like where you're drawing those lines. And again, to the point that you're talking about, and somewhat that I've been saying is like, it's about communication with your other relationships in your life. Whether it's, it doesn't even necessarily have to be significant others or family or things like that. It, you know, even like work, it's like, hey, letting them know, it's like, yeah, I'm going to be gone for 4 days because I'm in Milan, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also want to preface all of this. So like, these are our life circumstances. Not everyone has the same life circumstances as us. So we're just speaking from our perspective. We're not telling anyone you need to do a certain thing a certain way. But it's just a discussion, I think, about like, how do you find balance with the game and life for the longevity of both, right? Again, it's all about finding that balance, I think. And like, I agree with you. I agree with you, Rob. A lot of it just stems from just like communicating, being very clear, being very concise, polite about it, not like whining about it or anything like that. And then like that goes a long way, because then you're setting those expectations, you're setting those boundaries, or loosening the barriers. I don't know, whatever you are trying to do. And then that makes it so that like if someone needs to open that conversation with you, or your dog's barking at you to go outside, you're like, oh, sorry, buddy. Let me stop playing Petronac here.
We're in the middle of the game, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Let me go outside and like let me take you out for a walk. You know, like those are the types of things that like you have to remember. You know, So anyway, I just want to talk about that a little bit as we close out this session. We're closing in on like episode 50, so I'm thinking about like what we're gonna talk about. We can't talk about this there. We can, but like I thinking about all the topics that like we haven't hit yet. As like a podcast, and this is one of those that like, yeah, it's like I don't think anyone ever talks about but I think it's, you know, hey, anyone who's listening, if you have an opinion on this, like, feel free to leave comments, questions, concerns. Like, send me an email at gil1l@paddle1limited.com or leave a message or comment in the YouTube channel. Would love to hear your perspective, because I think, again, this is a community. You're not alone, right? No one's ever alone in this. You have to play, unless you're trying to play Karabas against, unless you're playing Force Table, you're playing against
with, like, yourself.
With yourself, right? There's always someone at the other side of the table that, at least for me, all you listeners have me to listen, like, I'll listen to you. So feel free to, you know, share your comments, concerns, would love to hear them. Anyway, so that's, you know, we're closing in at almost 10 o'clock at this time. So we've been at it for a long time.
About 45 without, minutes. Yeah. Yeah,
45, without Corey, I'm so sad. But
he's in Florida. He doesn't miss us.
Yeah, he does. He doesn't miss us at all. But yeah, I don't want to go to that full hour. I don't like doing that. I know some people like that's like a podcast thing. Like, I just don't. And maybe that's a bad thing. But like,
this is like perfect commute time.
Yeah, commute time. Yeah, exactly. You could split it up into 2 20-minute commutes, mm-hmm. 45 minutes, or like one really kind of long one, like one way. Yeah, perfect. I think it's enough. It's enough for me. Like, my commute is an hour, a little over an hour every day. So I would listen to this if I was doing this, and then I'd listen to like one other 20-minute podcast. Okay. Well, yeah. That's it, everybody. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate the support as always. And until next time, may the force be with you.